Hello, everyone. This is Valerie Cartonio with the Prison Pod, and I'm really excited today because we have Noelle Nickel joining us from North Carolina Coalition for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. And I'm going to jump right in and say, you had an amazing event yesterday, and I want to hear all about it.
Oh, it was amazing, Valerie, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share with you about it and to share with your listeners.
So, you had a march yesterday in Raleigh. Do we want to start talking about that right off, or do we want to talk a little bit about what the purpose of what you're doing is first?
I'm fine to start wherever you like. I'll just follow your lead. What do you think would be
okay.
the best place to start?
Why don't we just give a brief little snippet about what you do?
Okay. That's a great place to start. And I'll even back up just a little bit, if that's okay, and
yes.
share with you that my background is in social work. And I worked for more than 15 years on death penalty cases in North and South Carolina, and a couple of federal cases as well, as a mitigation specialist, which meant that it was my job to learn our client's life story. And I helped defense teams, attorneys, tell that story to either a jury or a judge to get the best possible result for our clients. And I also did some organizing work prior to that, particularly with people of faith against the death penalty. And so I started in this role part-time in 2021 as the executive director of the North Carolina Coalition for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, which is a way too long name for nonprofit. We often call ourselves the Coalition, or NCCADP. And we are now 19 partner organizations in North Carolina and a couple of national organizations. Some of our coalition partners are small, some of them are very large. And then in addition to our organizational partners, there are thousands of North Carolinians, and a good number of them showed up yesterday, who are all committed to ending the death penalty in North Carolina and creating a new vision of justice.
That's excellent to hear. So you had quite a day yesterday.
We did. And this is part of our commutation campaign, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. But we gathered particularly yesterday to mark 17 years since the last person was executed in North Carolina. Samuel Flippin was executed actually on August 18th, so it was one day beyond the anniversary date, in 2006. And we gathered and read the names of all 43 people who have been executed in North Carolina in what we call the modern era. So when the death penalty was reinstated, more than 650 people have been executed in North Carolina. We did not read all those names, but just the 43 since 1984. It was really powerful, Valerie. I hope that I'll be able to share some photos with you. We had a sign for each of those 43 people with their name, their birth date, and their execution date. And those were placed along the steps of the sanctuary. We gathered at Pullen Memorial Baptist Church. Pullen has a great history of social justice and, in fact, hosted a gathering on the anniversary of no executions, I believe, at the 10-year anniversary. So it was great to be in their space. And it was air-conditioned, which was really nice. So we were inside for about an hour. And those names of the 43 people were read in a one-sentence eulogy about the person. It was just deeply moving. And those names were read by people who knew the individual. Nearly all names were read by someone who knew them. So we had two of our 12 exonerees there. They read the names of people that they knew as friends who were executed. We had members of legal teams who represented individuals who were executed. We had a couple of family members who had loved ones executed. We had people who protested the night of an execution, and they read the name of the person who was executed when they were arrested for that protest. It was a very, very moving program. And then we marched after that. But yeah, let me pause and see how you want to follow up from that.
Well, I was curious because you marched to Central Prison, is that correct?
That's right.
And I'm curious, do you know if there's any windows on that section of death row that they could see out and see you guys?
We know that they cannot. Back in the day, they could. But death row is now in a different part of the prison. They cannot see us out on the street. They cannot hear us. They knew that we were there, however. Using the technology of text behind, I was able to send everyone a note and let them know that we would be out front of the prison on Saturday protesting executions.
So now you and I know what's going on, but for some of our listeners, where is North Carolina standing right now as far as death row sentencing and overturning the sentences that have already been given?
Yeah, that's a great question. And even people in North Carolina don't know the answer to that question, so I try to say it pretty often. Even though we haven't had an execution in 17 years now, their death penalty is, I won't say thriving, but it is definitely still alive in North Carolina. We have the fifth largest death row in the nation with 137 people sentenced to death. We've had one death sentence in 2023. We had two in 2022. So there are fewer death sentences than there were. But district attorneys are still pursuing death, particularly a couple in our state, disproportionately so. There's geographic disparity of pursuit of the death penalty by district attorneys in North Carolina. So we do still have jury sentencing people to death. And even though executions have not happened in a number of years, it is still a threat that executions could resume, which is one of the reasons that we are so strongly advocating for Governor Cooper to commute all death sentences to prison terms, because like we saw in the federal system, executions could resume. I guess I might add one more thing. You asked about sentences being overturned. And so there are some district attorneys that are taking a second look at some cases. That is happening at a very slow rate. There is also the Racial Justice Act, and there is pending litigation for that, which is one of the reasons that we haven't had any executions in a number of years. And there will be an evidentiary hearing about that litigation in February of 2024, is my understanding. So we hope that there might be some relief there. There were several individuals who had their sentences overturned due to RJ litigation a couple of years ago.
And as we know, race comes into play, as does what class you are to when it comes to sentencing.
It absolutely does. And I'm happy to share some data about that if you like.
But I'd love that.
Yeah, it's undeniable. It truly is undeniable. Our death row in North Carolina is made up of 60% people of color. And the demographic in our state is 30% people of color. Particularly if you look at a jury. More than half the people on our death row were sentenced by an all-white jury or a jury with only one person of color. And then this, I think, is a really striking statistic. If you are facing capital trial in North Carolina, regardless of your race as the client or the defendant, you are 2 to 3 times more likely to get sentenced to death if the victim of the homicide is white.
So that goes all the way around. Race comes into play.
It does. And our exonerees, I think I mentioned two of them were with us yesterday. We have 12 people exonerated from death row in North Carolina so far, and 11 of them were men of color. Yeah, and let me just put a footnote on what I just said. I know that Alfred Rivera has been on your podcast as well.
Yes.
And he's on my team, on staff with me. And it is just so moving to hear him share his story as well. He's one of our exonerees, for those listeners that don't know.
Yeah, and JJ has mentioned him before, too.
Yes.
So it's nice that, you know, the guys there do remember him.
Yes.
They haven't forgotten him, and they have hope because of him.
Yes. Ed Chapman and Henry McCullum were also with us yesterday. They both have amazing stories to share as well. They were actually on death row longer than Alfred and read names of people who were executed yesterday at the program at the church.
I just remembered what I was going to ask. Why should we relook at the death penalty? What are some of the things, and exonerations is one of the things that I'm talking about here?
You know, I think there are different reasons depending on our audience or depending on where someone comes at this conversation. Certainly the systemic racism, for me and for our organization, is one of the most compelling reasons. I mentioned the geographic disparity. So we have 23 states that don't even have the death penalty. And in North Carolina, we have 100 counties, and a good number of them have not had a death sentence in many, many years. Wake County, which is where Raleigh is located, Forsyth County, which is where Winston-Salem is located. Both of those are two, you know, large metropolitan areas. Those district attorneys pursue capital sentencing at a disproportionate rate compared to the entire rest of the state. And so that's another reason. Geographic disparity in the application of the death penalty. Mitigating factors such as someone's background, you know, if you mentioned socioeconomic status, many, many people sentenced to death row in North Carolina come from a poor background, also mental health issues, substance abuse issues, certainly abuse that they suffered as children or growing up. So lots of factors that made them quite vulnerable to whatever led to the tragic event that happened, provided they're guilty, of course, and innocence is a whole other conversation and a very compelling reason too. But what we know, you know, Bryan Stevenson reminds us that we are better than the worst thing we've ever done. And so we really want North Carolinians, we want Governor Cooper to consider everyone on death row is a human being that has dignity, that has an opportunity for redemption, and far more than the crime that they are convicted of. The last reason that I'll mention for now is cost. Now, for me, the issues of dignity and racism and morality outweigh cost. But for those who are really concerned about fiscal responsibility, it's far more expensive to pursue the death penalty than to incarcerate someone in a very secure facility. And it doesn't keep us safe as well. We know that. We know that the death penalty is not a deterrent. And if we invested that money in community resources, in restorative justice, then we could really address violence in a significant way. We can make our community safer because the death penalty does not do that.
No, we could start by having support resources for families raising their children. A lot of the people that end up in prison have had such trauma, and a lot of it has to do with poverty on top
that's
of
right.
all the other layers.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that, you know, we really need to address.
Yeah.
And you know, you have somebody who's so traumatized before the incident ever happens.
That's right.
And you have to look at that, you know. And of course, you know, if we go back to the churches and people who believe in God, my belief has always been taught when I was being raised up as a child is we're not supposed to kill people.
Right.
Period.
Right.
So how in the world do we allow our government to do that?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we're not a faith-based organization, but quite a few of our partners are. We work closely with the North Carolina Council of Churches. One of our new partners is Catholics for Abolition in North Carolina. And nearly all major faith traditions now have a statement in opposition to the death penalty.
That's excellent to hear, because to me, a lot of our faith leaders, if they start coming forward and really talking about this, they're going to bring more people in from their churches and really bring to the attention of the ones who are faith believers that their own faith says that this is wrong.
That's right. And we really do strive to be interfaith based in our work. So I should also mention that one of our partners now is Carolina Jews for Justice. And we have advocates and leadership among us who are Muslim, like Alfred. We have a very strong Buddhist leader among us. So we really appreciate the interfaith perspective for death penalty abolition as well.
So now people that are listening, first we'll go to North Carolina.
Okay.
The people that are listening in North Carolina, what can they do right now to help this cause?
We would love to be able to be in closer communication with many, many more North Carolinians. We believe that there are a lot of people who would like to join our movement, and they just don't know about us yet. And so if folks would go to our website at nccadp.org and sign up for our email list, I do not email folks too often, but each time I do, there's something that I would like for them to know about. So this event yesterday, for example, folks would have known about it if they were on our email list. The sign-on letter that we currently have for people of faith, they can access that on our website and also through our emails if they sign up for that. We want to help people know about our commutation campaign. Our next big gathering will be December 2nd back in Raleigh. We'd like even more people to join us then. And we would like for people to share stories. So there's so many stories on our website. And there's art by people who are incarcerated. And there's a beautiful collection of stories by people who have lost loved ones to homicide. They, in fact, led the beginning of our campaign with a large march in December. They also were present yesterday. We have a strong group of individuals who've suffered the trauma of losing a family member to murder, and they oppose the death penalty also. So if folks go to our website, they can hear those stories. Those stories are often not told. You know, I think the general public believes that if you lose a loved one to murder, then of course you want to pursue the death penalty. And that is not the case. And so amplifying those stories, I think, is really important as well.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I've been, of course, reading tons of on this subject. And I find that very few of the families want executions. You know, they want them to be held accountable, but they don't believe that taking their life is the way to do it.
I would never speak for someone who lost a loved one to murder, since that is not part of my story, thankfully. But I can assure you that the individuals that I know, what they say is that they didn't know there was an alternative, that the system is so focused on retribution, on a punitive approach, that family members who are in the throes of grief are told that this is what they should want. And if the system, in fact, offered some other opportunity, that more people would perhaps not buy in each step of the way to the belief that this is what would bring them healing. I don't use the word, it starts with a C. I don't use that word, closure. Because that is such a personal, individual process. But what
it
I do talk about is healing and asking people, what will bring you farther along your journey of healing? And my friends who have lost loved ones to murder say that the existence of the death penalty actually perpetuates violence and does not promote healing.
We're talking about families. There's a monthly group, the Family Survivor Engagement Group. Are you part of that?
Yes, I facilitate it every month.
Okay, could you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's a remarkable.
It's a deep honor for me to engage with those folks every month. Many of them I've known for decades. What I didn't mention is that along with being a social worker, I have some background in working with individuals who have suffered the trauma of the murder of a loved one. And so we started meeting, it's been almost 2 years now, I guess. A year. Time time seems to be odd still, I think, because of COVID. But we meet monthly, and it is not a support group, but it is a supportive group for people to talk about how they want to use their voices of experience of losing a loved one to homicide to end the death penalty in North Carolina. So, for example, when we launched the commutation campaign in December, I think I shared that they led that march. They also drafted a letter that was signed by more than 20 people, and that was sent to Governor Cooper in December of 2022 as well, clearly stating that they oppose the death penalty. Our first delegation that met with some of Governor Cooper's staff earlier this year included three individuals who'd lost loved ones to murder. There have been several op-eds that have written by family members, including Reverend Sharon Risher. You might know of her story. She lost several loved ones in the Mother Emanuel shooting in Charleston, and she is strongly opposed to the death penalty. So on the anniversary of that tragic event in June of this year, she published an op-ed highlighting the work of faith leaders and people of faith against the death penalty here in North Carolina. People of faith who've signed our letter opposing the death penalty and asking for commutation with Governor Cooper.
So you're doing some amazing work.
I have the opportunity to work with amazing people, Valerie. The individuals in this group and the Homicide Survivor Engagement Group are truly amazing. I want to add that they have now decided that they want to open that group also to individuals who've had loved ones executed. They're very interested in not having these rigid boundaries about how we define victim. They believe that if you have suffered violence, then you are part of their community. And so we will open that group up to individuals who've lost loved ones to execution as well. I anticipate probably sometime this fall.
Well, there's so many people that are affected, and we learn from each other's stories. And by learning from others, that helps us heal. And that's kind of what the whole basis of restorative justice is so everyone has a better understanding of each other, so that we can come together and heal together.
That's not always
possible, but it's a step.
Yeah. Yeah, restorative justice is one of our core values. We don't have a particular program, but one of our partners is very engaged in restorative justice, Restorative Justice Durham. They resolve high-level felonies, actually, using restorative practices. And this group that I've described to you, it's rooted in the principles of restorative justice, really inviting people to name how have you been harmed and what would bring you healing.
Yeah, and those conversations need to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. So let me see. Okay, so now I'm in Maine. What can I do from here? I mean, I know I'm doing something right now, but
you absolutely
other people,
are.
Because I'm like, you know where my passion is. And for the listeners that don't know, you and I came into knowing each other through somebody we both knew on death row.
Yes.
And I've been, for the last year and a half, been working with several men in Central Prison. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, this is my calling. I never thought it was going to bring me here, but this is my calling. If I can do anything, I would love to see us overturn the death penalty all the way around. But now I have a personal part in this because I've come to know many of the men there, and I even feel differently. I was against the death penalty to start out with. But now, even more so, I can't even think about it because there's several that I talk to on a monthly basis, and I write to them, and I text message with them, and I've heard about their families, and you start really seeing people differently. They're not just a number in a cell somewhere that we're supposed to forget about. They're living, breathing human beings that still have purpose in this world. Some of the stories that I've gathered from the men that I've been working with, to me, are remarkable stories for other people to hear, because it makes them realize if they are so strong to survive through what they've been through there, there's hope. There's, you know, and every day that we do not allow the death penalty is a hopeful day to me.
Yes.
And I hope this message gets out there. I've been running my mouth like crazy, and I hope to speak to everybody who's advocating against the death penalty, because let's get our voices heard everywhere. Let's make them sick of hearing about it.
Exactly. Well, you know, you mentioned the word story a couple of times, and I think that's one of the beautiful ways that you are reaching people that otherwise may not know the humanity of these individuals. You are sharing their stories. And we talked a lot about story yesterday when we gathered at the church and then we marched. What we have to do is change the narrative, change the story of the wider public, of our elected officials, to understand that these are individuals with humanity and dignity, and that the death penalty doesn't keep us safe, and all the other reasons that I've already mentioned. But you sharing the stories that you do, it's a huge, huge step for someone to just hear a story sometimes and be open to it. And I think now that we have, you know, more podcasts and ways for people to hear those stories, just the more we can share. And so I would invite your listeners who are not in North Carolina, read some stories, listen to some stories, really get to know individuals that are sentenced to death and understand the plight that they face should they be executed, because executions, of course, are happening in other states. I have so much empathy for and just pain and grief for my counterparts in states that are actively executing. Yeah, I just want to pause there. But for folks who are outside of North Carolina, support those states that are deep in the throes of trying to save people's lives, and find out about North Carolina. Right now, our campaign targeting Governor Cooper is limited to North Carolinians, because we believe that he is going to be most responsive to his constituents. But I anticipate in 2024, when we broaden our campaign, that we will have an invitation for individuals outside North Carolina to reach out to Governor Cooper in some way. And I will make sure that you know about that. Maybe I can come back on and we can talk some more. It will be important for him to hear from people beyond North Carolina. We don't know what his political aspirations are after he leaves office as our governor. He is prohibited from running for another term. He's term limited, so we know he will be stepping aside as our governor at the end of 2024. But we know that he cares about what people suggest that he should do and how he should respond with someone with quite a lot of authority. Unlike some governors in other states, Governor Cooper has complete gubernatorial executive authority granted to him by the North Carolina Constitution to commute all death sentences to prison terms. And I think that he needs to hear that from North Carolinians right now. And certainly in the coming months, we'll make an opportunity for people outside the state to let him know about their opinions as well.
How many are you aware of that possibly right now have cases that are still open, that there's a possibility just on their legal end that they could have their sentence changed in a resentencing?
Nearly everyone sentenced to death currently in North Carolina has Racial Justice Act litigation. So a large number have litigation pending in that regard. Not everyone, but many. Beyond that, I don't feel qualified to give you a really good answer. Mm-hmm. There are a number of individuals who only have that as pending litigation, meaning the rest of issues that could be challenged in court, in state court or federal court, they no longer have that option. So we would say they are in a clemency stage of their case, except for the Racial Justice Act litigation. But I don't feel that I could tell you exactly how many are in that category. There are a number, however.
So I definitely want to make sure to get all those links up too.
Yes.
I'll put up as much information as I can for everybody. And if you can think of anything that, you know, you want put up too, I will add it, because we want to get as much information out there to the people as possible.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, for anyone who's listening in North Carolina who's not incarcerated, I would be happy to come and speak with members of my team or with volunteers about our work. And we often share the film Racist Roots, which is a 25-minute film produced by our partners at the Center for Death Penalty Litigation. And I will share that link with you. And I was wondering if you might want to just run that audio of that film at some point so it could be accessed.
Oh, definitely. I didn't know what the regulations on that are.
I'll check with our partners at CDPL, but I think that they would be fine for you to share it, you know, as long as they were credited.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, because that's an excellent film. I recommend that anybody who, some people had said they had watched the 13th.
Yes.
And I said, so if you haven't seen Racist Roots, you got to go see that. So
yes.
I sent them the link and they said, oh, my word, it just continues.
Yes. And Racist Roots is specific to North Carolina. I believe all states that have the death penalty would be able to produce a similar film if they had the resources and the time and put forth the effort to do that. I think it's interesting and important for people in other states to see, but it is very North Carolina specific.
Yeah. Well, it amazed me the connection to slavery.
Yes.
Is just unbelievable. And
yes.
As we know, I mean, a lot of the prisons are run, for lack of a better word, on slave labor.
That's
you know,
right.
Some places they get 30 cents an hour, you know. And
that's right. That's right. And the film really also highlights the direct connection to racial terror lynching and how the death penalty is the modern day iteration of lynching in North Carolina.
It is. Well, is there anything else we should cover before we wrap things up? Or I do want to remind people that the website is NCCADP.org.
That's right.
The North Carolina Coalition for Alternatives to the Death Penalty.
That's right. Yeah. And if you just Google North Carolina Death Penalty, you will find us. I think, Valerie, I would love to just send a message to your listeners who are incarcerated, and particularly the individuals in North Carolina at Central Prison, and just to remind people there inside the walls that there are so many people outside here that care about them, that believe that they are human beings with dignity, and we are working hard and we are not going to give up for a better world.
Their lives matter.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, I think we're going to wrap it up there. So hold on just a second while I say my goodbyes.
All right.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today on the Prison Pod. I'd like to thank Noelle and Nicole for joining us from the North Carolina Coalition for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. This is a conversation that will continue. If anyone has any questions at all, feel free to get a hold of me. You can email me if you're on the outside at prisongram at prisonpod.org. And for those of you inside, remember, I want to hear from you. So send those letters, Prison Pod, Post Office Box 294, Orono, and it's O-R-O-N-O, Maine, 04473. And I'll be back again in a few weeks. Thanks for joining us.